Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, welcome back to In the Pink with me, Natalie Pinkham, and Bose, helping you stay connected throughout the lockdown and beyond. A big thank you to Michelle Moan. What a life story she has had and continues to have. If that doesn't get made into a movie, then I will eat my Ultimo bra. Michelle, thank you for your time. Proof that hard work and tenacity does indeed get you a very long way in life. Now, next up is someone equally as hardworking and tenacious, the comeback kid of Formula One, Mr. Danny Kvyat. And there is a lot more to Mr. Kvyat than first meets the eye. Did you know, for example, that he loves to read the classics and plays the electric guitar? How many F1 drivers do you know who read Tolstoy? Well, Kvyat is one of them. So let's hand over the reins on In the Pink to Mr. Kvyat. Take it away.
Well, great to see you. And your hair's growing back. You're getting back to your normal ways.
Thanks. Yes, I liked when it was a bit shorter, the hair, but sometimes you have to grow it back now.
More aerodynamic with the shortcut. How have you been coping? Because it's kind of getting easier, I've heard, in Monaco.
Yes, it's much calmer now. Some places have been opened up already. The beaches, the seaside, and the outside training has been back to normal. So, the life is pretty much back to very close to normal, I would say. And we went to one restaurant with a couple of friends that I know are very careful about their hygiene, I would say. In the restaurant, we sat outside and it was nice. It was a strange feeling, but it was good to have one glass of wine maybe with them and laugh about some things.
So nice. I think we forget how much we need interaction and touch as humans. It's kind of what powers us, isn't it?
Yeah, well, still, you know, keeping the distance, obviously, it's still not like everyone was hugging and kissing. There was still the tension is there, of course. It's not like it's going to go from one day to normal. Of course, you still need to be careful. But yeah, of course, it was nice. It felt strange, but nevertheless, it was nice.
So how was lockdown for you? Was it quite lonely, or did you get to see people throughout what was it, sort of 8 or 10 weeks out there?
Well, yeah, but I would say that the peak part, I think, was a bit lonely for everyone, because it was when everyone was strongly advised to stay at home no matter what. And there was a part where it was a little bit, maybe not so much to do, a little bit bored in a way, but have to, you know, carry on, try to find the new things. Like I tried to play guitar quite a bit, read some books, and enjoy some movies, and maybe just have some rest, you know. The time, I never had time to have such a, you know, easygoing schedule, and I just try to enjoy it in a way.
Yeah, but hang on, I heard it wasn't just learning to play the guitar. You did something with Biffy Clyro. What was that?
Yes, we did a piece with Biffy Clyro, with Simon, and their lead singer, and he's a very cool guy, very easygoing personality. It was very comfortable, you know, talking with him. And I watched him a little bit play the F1 game and tried to give him some tips about maybe how to take some corners here and there. And he's been doing a good job. And then he watched a bit me playing guitar and gave me some tips about it. So we kind of exchanged a bit our professional experience.
That is very cool. That's like the ultimate masterclass, exchanging talent tips. I love it. And then the reading, because that's the other thing that has surprised me about you, is just how much you do read.
Well, I mean, you know, I try to read because obviously when you're especially in the lockdown and staring at the screen all the time is a bit, it could be a bit depressing, no? So I tried to read and maybe learn something new. And also it's very nice. It calms me down a little bit before going to bed and helps me sleep a little bit better.
Yeah.
I try to read the books right now. I'm reading Mike Tyson's biography. It's very interesting. It really like sucked me in, and I read usually always in the evening, but now I read also in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. It's a very interesting book.
Cool. I'll add it to the list. I'm bad. I don't create enough time for reading. And the problem is, it's soporific to me. I will open a book and just nod off after like one page. I get so sleepy when I read.
But that's good also. So you should do it before bed.
I try to, but I never get very far. I'm reading I Am Pilgrim at the moment. Have you read that?
Oh, I Am what?
I Am Pilgrim.
Pilgrim. Who wrote it?
So my husband says, and actually so does my sister-in-law and my mum, that it's the best book they've ever read. Better than Shantaram, better than anything else. But the reason, I don't know why I'm surprised to hear an F1 driver read as much as you do, but you're actually really into classic literature as well, aren't you? Or at least you were growing up.
Yes, I was. I was reading a lot of classics. I read them when I was younger, a little bit younger. And because in Russia, there are many classic writers now. There is Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, and things like that. And I read some of their books. And I would say it's quite, it makes you think quite a lot. But now I'm more into like with easier stuff, you know, just trying to enjoy a bit more. Like also Mike Tyson's biography, of course, is also very, there are some like interesting bits and makes you think about how such a, you know, great athlete was getting to where he is now, becoming world champion.
Yeah. And how did that marry into the homeschooling? Because you certainly had to do a bit of that with your dad, didn't you? And it wasn't easy because like most young racers, all you want to do is get out there on the track, and that consumes all your thoughts. So how did you kind of run the homeschooling alongside your racing ambitions?
I was never really into homeschooling, especially when I was away at races. It's, you know, you're driving all day. First of all, you get a bit tired. And even on the days off, I was just thinking about, okay, how I was taking this corner, how I should try to take it next time, what like setup we tried on our go-kart, should we try to do this? And with the engine, what did we do? Should I do this or that? And I would call my team boss and we would talk about like different things. I was more interested in that than, I was more interested in go-kart parts than in the school, to be honest. So for me, it was a bit tough, but I still tried to force myself because my parents were saying, look, if it will go wrong for you in racing, you will need education a lot. So I try to, you know, do the math, the history. Sometimes I would be very lazy, I wouldn't study, and my parents would be angry at me, but I was like, sorry, guys.
Well, you had the application to read Leo Tolstoy, which is more than most kids could say. So did you have a plan B? Did you have an option that you could fall back on if racing didn't materialize into a career?
Well, I would guess it would be no bit of a classic path, no, try to get a diploma in university or, I don't know, start some business projects. I don't know then where life would take, you know, if I know some guys who didn't make it, maybe they go to some businesses, some property business and stuff like that, and actually can do a pretty good job there also. So, but for me, it was always about, you know, trying to make it to as much top as possible. I never really thought about plan B because I was sure inside myself that I'll make it, you know.
And when did that spark first come? When did the passion for racing start? Because, you know, it's fairly unusual, I would say, growing up as a Russian kid to have those kind of aspirations. Would that be fair?
Yes, I would say now the racing is a lot more popular in Russia than it was back then when I was starting. When I was starting, it was at a quite low level. It wasn't from, no one was familiar with Formula One, with racing in general. So yeah, it was all by chance. I just tried the go-kart once and I got the racing bug and that was it really. It was in I was very passionate about it. I straight away understood that this is what makes me the happiest, and that's it. So I just sticked to it and chose my road very early on.
And what did your parents make of that? I mean, it's one thing you being passionate about it, but it's another thing persuading them.
Yeah, well, I mean, my mom mainly saw it as a dangerous sport, and the speed of like even the mini go-kart was like terrifying her a little bit. So she was like, need to be careful. But my father, he was quite happy that I think I was finding something that I was really enjoying and that I was dedicating myself to it completely with all my heart. And so he was happy to support me in something that I love doing.
And was it obvious from a very early age that you had a natural ability to race?
Yes, I would say so. Yes, since first times, I think I wasn't seeing it enough, but I think other people around me, they would always be quite sure that in terms of speed and pace, I was in the racecraft, I was always immediately up there, because I straight away started to compete in the Russian championship where there was a lot of experienced guys, but I managed straight away to, you know, beat them or at least gave them a very big rivalry. And of course, I was lacking experience in the beginning, but it was immediately like clear that when you qualify on pole or in first top three straight away, it was a very good sign. And then we decided to move to Italy because the level of racing was so much higher there. You know, you can race in Europe every year because there is no such a harsh winter there, and there is no snow, so you can race all the time everywhere and every week, and there is a lot of karting tracks, while in Russia at that time there was too little tracks, but now luckily it keeps growing, so I'm happy to see that progress.
That's quite a bold decision at a young age, because what were you, sort of 10 or 11 when you moved to Italy? It's quite a leap of faith. Yes. For your parents.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I did a couple of years of karting in Russia, and we started to occasionally go to Italy, and we saw that maybe in Italy it was very much tougher competition, and that's where we had to be in terms to be able to prove myself and grow as a racing driver as much as possible. And yeah, it was bold, but you know, that was necessary. So sometimes it takes a bit of risky decisions now to get up.
So what happened? You both your parents moved with you? How did it work?
Temporarily they were once at a time with me because my father had to do some work in Moscow, and my mom would be often with me. Then my father would attend most of my races, and I had to go to Italian school since very young age, and I didn't know the language to start with, so it was very hard, and I had to learn very quickly. And yeah, that was not an easy one, but still, it went well. In the end, I got very friendly with many Italian guys, and I still have some friends from school, even until now.
It's amazing commitment for a family to make, you know, in pursuit of your dream at such a young age. Does it surprise you when you look back at that now? Do you feel like it was a sacrifice that they made, or did you just have that that fire burning so bright, even as young as 10 or 11, that this was going to be something that would work well for everyone?
Well, you know, at that age, you kind of, you know, you commit to something and you never look back, I think. I think I never really looked back. I just did things and we thought it was right at that time and we did it. And it was my new life, you know, my new reality. And I had to adapt to it. And when you're at that young age, you adapt quite quickly, luckily. So for me, after 2 or 3 years in Italy, I was already fluent in Italian and very familiar with local rules, with local karting. And yeah, so it was very fast adaptation, luckily, when you're very young. So I never looked back at that age.
That's amazing. Really amazing. And actually, you know, fast forward to 2018, I know it was a bit of a strange time for you dipping out of Formula One in terms of the racing, but there must have been a massive sense of pride being a sim driver for Ferrari, having had such a big chunk of your life in Italy.
Yes, of course. Yes, obviously simulated driver. Maybe you would want to be the main driver, of course, but also that is it was very nice times, very nice times. Like I said, you know, many times that period was still very important for me, for my recreation process, and to be able to come back to F1 with more hunger and deliver better results, you know, because once you're not hungry enough, maybe when you lose a bit your love for sport, it's harder to perform. So that year really helped me to regain my my confidence and my natural ability back. Yeah.
Now, I know I'm jumping around a bit in terms of the years, but you made an interesting point there about sort of falling back in love with the sport. Had it kind of chipped away at you a lot? Because I remember talking to you in the pen a number of times, and there was one time where I felt like your body language was really bad, and you needed to, I don't know, almost take yourself out and regain that confidence that we saw at the beginning. And that's certainly something, fast forwarding to now, or at least to the end of last year, that seems to have happened. Do you think everybody needs a bit of a reset now and again?
Oh, well, I can't talk for everyone. Of course, everyone's situation is different, you know. But for me, yeah, it was. I think I was a bit more affected by those you know, events that led up for me to lose a bit my fire, my passion for the sport. And like you pointed out, yeah, there was times when I wasn't really enjoying it, when I was there in the TV pen and I didn't really want to be there, to be honest. And that's wrong, you know. No, I meant not just TV pen. I didn't want to be there in general, not just TV pen. I meant in the... I didn't feel like I didn't want to be there in the paddock in general. Those times. But when it's like this, it's wrong. It means that something is not working, and you need to take a step back and refresh. So sometimes it's impossible because you always need to perform. But luckily for me, there was this year, 2018, and then 2019. It felt much better, and I loved being in TV pen with you, for example, more.
Yeah, but joking aside, when you are having a hard time in the sport, the last thing you feel like is someone like me shoving a mic under your nose and asking you to recount and explain and you know, almost justify what's happened. And it's one of the harsh realities of the sport. I think everybody sort of feels that you guys are just living the dream, racing cars, and you are to a great extent. But when times are tough, you're very exposed, aren't you? I mean, the spotlight is very much on you.
Yes, of course. Yeah, you're right. And sometimes, in the past, you know, it was bothering me quite a lot. But, you know, now I just grown to learn that this is part of the job. And to be honest, now it can still be sometimes frustrating. Of course, you can have a bad day, and you're always going to have a not so good day in our sport, especially with so many races. Sometimes something will not go your way, and it's okay. You know, you need to explain and pull yourself forward and live with that and turn the page, I would say. So it's normal. Of course, when I'm into F1 since I'm 19 years old, and in the beginning it's came very young, maybe on the edge of too young, but then now I see it differently. the things that used to irritate me now don't really irritate me anymore.
The world continues to evolve, and the new norm isn't fully clear yet. But what does remain constant is the core message from our friends at Bose. Stay calm, stay centred, and stay connected. Communication is key in everything we do and goes a long way to nurturing both ourselves and our relationships with others. So continue to talk about what matters to you. And don't be afraid to block out unhelpful noise or indeed to embrace silence, because doing both can be great. Some of the ways we work will have changed forever. Embrace that. Make those new ways work for you. Shape the new norm to suit you. Feel more, do more, be more with Bose.
Well, let's cast your mind back then to 2014 when you joined Toro Rosso and you kind of came up through the programme. The following year, you were at Red Bull, you're actually doing incredibly well. Were you kind of thinking, yeah, I'm set now, this is it, you know, I'm on this trajectory? Or were you constantly aware that this was always a learning process? And everybody always talks so much about the Red Bull program being so ruthless and Helmut Marko not taking any prisoners. Was that pressure kind of always there, or did you feel that you had everything under control?
Oh, you know, it's hard to say. I think at that time, you know, my first rookie year, I think rookie years are always, you know, in the way, once you start getting the flow, it should be one of your easiest years because everyone is praising you, everyone is happy. Even if you make a small mistake, everyone will say, you know, it's normal, it's part of the process, of course. It's nothing bad in it. Then, of course, straight away, going to Red Bull Racing was a big change of the atmosphere. It was a top team already at the time, and they won many championships before I came into the team. And once I came into the team, it was one of the worst packages they had for a while, unfortunately, at that time. So it wasn't easy in that respect. Of course, if we would be constantly on the podiums, and the competitiveness level would be higher of the car, would be a different story, but it wasn't. So it's just sometimes timing can work for you and against you, no? In life and in sport in general. So just was slightly, just a little bit missing, maybe a couple of podiums would help a lot, the security, the confidence feeling. And even if I did very well against Daniel that year, still, you know, the atmosphere in the team was tricky because it's not where they used to be at that time normally. So there was always a bit of pressure there, of course.
But you did, of course, get your first podium in 2015 in Hungary. Just reflect on that for us. What was the feeling like? Was it a lot of pressure off your shoulders, do you think, just to bag that first podium?
Yeah, it was nice. You know, we've been having not an easy season until now, and then in Hungary we got a double podium, which was very nice for the team. It was a big refreshment, and so I was happy. I could say to myself, at least one podium is in the pocket. You know, so it's always, you know, about ticking boxes, and that's how I go. You know, in career, okay, that was the one tick on the box, and I wanted to know more podiums, and now I had maybe two more since then. And you know, you always want to tick your first victory box, and I think after you tick your victory box off, then you want the championship and so on.
And then fast forward to 2016 in China. I tell you, one of my most enduring memories of that was you in the cool down room with Sebastian. And you really holding your own, because he was giving you a bit of criticism and you didn't back down, much like the way you drove in the race. How do you remember that time?
I mean, people remember that episode because, of course, it went on the internet and everyone, you know, how the modern world unfortunately works like this. You only believe and remember what but it was filmed, no? So it was good. I mean, it was nice race for me at that time. You know, it was very tricky times already, and to get that podium was nice. But he wasn't happy, and he said it. But I thought that I wasn't wrong in that episode, so I just said that I didn't share his opinion. That's all. I think that was my main point. I was a little bit surprised at that time, to be honest. But no hard feelings. We actually get along quite well, you know.
Yeah, I think you did it with a big smile on your face, and that makes everything much better. So actually, that reminds me, I was going to ask you who your mates are on the grid. Who would you kind of classify as a good friend? Or is it hard to be mates with other racers?
It's hard, I think, to be completely, you know, saying yes, it's friend kind of thing. You know, we're always going to be competitors. We always want to beat each other. We always want to, you know, be better in some way. And like this friendship suffers, no, normally. I know everyone quite well. And I think outside the track, pretty much everyone is quite, maybe I spend most time with Daniel, Ricciardo, and Carlos, who was at Robert Kubica, Valtteri, and Nico Hülkenberg, maybe mostly the guys who I saw more outside the track, I would say. But then on the track again, whoever we have conversation with is always very friendly, you know, in a way. But on track, you want to always be better, no?
Now, obviously, after that podium in China, we thought, you know, and I'm sure you did too, that, you know, more podiums would come and your career would grow and grow. And then you had that massive blow of being demoted and Max coming in and then winning on his debut. I mean, was that the part of the process where your confidence took a big knock and that you realised you had to rebuild from there? Because it showed, I think everybody agrees, massive strength of character that you did come back from that.
Yes, of course. It's not, you know, it's not, wasn't the best times for sure for me. It was tricky times. It was that time when you didn't like my body language in TV pen, I guess. because, I wasn't a happy guy at that time. For me, it was a bit tricky times. That's when I think I wasn't very excited about going racing anymore, but it's part of life, you know, it's part of sport. And coming back from those moments, you have to come back, you know, you have to keep strong and isolate your bad thoughts about negative thoughts and try to move forward regardless. And it wasn't easy, but it took maybe until 2019, but then it was much better.
What was the process? How did you do it? Did you get support from friends and family? Who kind of mentored you through that?
Many people, of course, they try to help. Everyone was, there were many kind people, but still it's not enough. You know, you have to be, you have to do it by yourself. Unfortunately, there is nothing. It's very rare that someone will pull you through the whole process. You know, it's important that you also go and fight your own demons, and you fight your own you know, character, and understand what makes you happy, what doesn't. And of course I got good support from friends, from family, but sometimes I wasn't open to support really, it's okay, because then maybe 2018 was a year off that I needed, and it helped in that time. So in a bad situation, just take a year off, basically.
Yeah, not everyone comes back after a year off, but I think there'll be lots of people listening to this, particularly young people and people at the moment that are struggling after lockdown, and they're trying to get their careers back on track. Is there advice that you can give them? Are there things, do you think that kind of time for reflection, and perhaps people have been able to do that in lockdown, is important in just getting some kind of clarity on where you really want to go in life?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot.
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, of course, you know, sport is one thing and life is another thing. So it's a bit hard to compare sometimes. Of course, there are some similarities, but, you know, just need to, you know, carry on no matter what and try to not to think negative and try to, even in a difficult situation, you're never really lonely and you need to try, you know, to keep moving forward and not to get frustrated with yourself and with the circumstances. So just also the patience is very important in those cases, I guess. But everyone's situation, I think, is quite personal. So it's hard to just give one solid advice.
Was there ever a time that you thought you would give up, that you'd leave F1? Did you feel like the door was closed at any point?
You know, I said many times that 2018, you know, I kind of let it go already and I thought that, you know, probably that's it. But, you know, very luckily, you know, I got this, another chance it makes me think that, of course, I'm lucky doing what I'm doing and I'm very happy. You know, now that we go back racing again, it's very exciting times because I love what I do, you know, and driving this incredible cars on the best tracks. With the best, you know, strongest rivals possible. It's always a fantastic feeling and opportunity.
So just tell us a bit more about 2018. So you were the sim driver for Ferrari. How kind of immersed were you in the whole Ferrari culture? What was that experience like?
Yeah. Just for info, I have 1% battery left. If I'll disappear, yes. I'll call you from my iPad, okay?
Okay, fine.
Okay, but I'll carry. I'll go. it was nice. I mean, I was, just mainly a simulator driver. I attended a couple of races as a third driver as well. It was nice. Of course, once I was on the track, I was always thinking, damn, it would be nice to go driving, you know, but I couldn't. So I tried to enjoy the city a little bit and just being on the track, and the simulator job was quite a lot, and just doing it quite often, especially in the beginning of the year, you know, when car is still quite quite fresh, but also during summer quite a bit, and just trying, you know, to help as much as possible. Every time that I went in there, I know I tried to, of course, simulator is not the real car, and sometimes it can be. If you're ex Formula One driver, it can be boring to just drive simulator, but with the mindset to do my best.
It must have helped speaking the language, because one of the big things that all the engineers say is that just to be part of their culture, be able to communicate with them and get the nuances of their culture is so important. That must have stood you in good stead.
Yes, for sure, it was a help. So I was able to communicate, you know, with Italian, with most of the engineers and team members. And of course, I wasn't, you know, communicating professionally with everyone because my job was quite limited. But still, it was important, and everyone was pleased. And of course, when you talk language of someone, then it feels a bit more like friendly and more at home for them, and so they open up a bit more with you and so on. So yeah, of course it made a difference, positive difference.
But I'm right in thinking it's not just Russian, Italian and English you speak. You're a bit of a linguist. There's Spanish, is it true, the Spanish, Dutch, yeah, and Finnish in there as well?
Dutch, no. no. And Finnish, no, just very basic, yeah, very basic words.
Go with it, go with it. Makes you sound really intelligent.
No, I speak a bit of French also, you know, but pretty well for languages.
That'll do. So when did you first know, when did you first realise that there was going to be an opportunity for you to come back into Formula One? Was it Helmut Marko who called you?
Well, yeah, you know, we've been a little bit in touch with Helmut a bit during the beginning of summer. I was, you know, making a few calls to see how's the situation around. And anyway, we maintained the contact even after we ended the relationship in 2017. So we kind of were able to stay in touch. And then once the whole thing, you know, when the market started to move around, then I got the call and we set up a meeting and we managed to go through details and kind of already there in that meeting kind of make a deal. And then we just started to work on details and the contract was ready. So then it was very happy times for me at that time. I was very happy, but at the same time, I was a little bit anxious about coming back. You know, it's not easy to come back to the exactly same ambient with which maybe there was some tricky situations, tricky times. So it took also a bit of, I never thought twice, but once I did sign, I was thinking, okay, it's going to be in the beginning a little bit challenging, but luckily it was not.
In what way? Challenging in terms of your ability or just reconnecting with other people?
No, just reconnecting with other people, but we made a good deal, you know, we made a good, France also was very supportive internally on many things and welcomed me back very warmly. So I was very thankful, you know, to him, for him, for support, because I think he knew the same thing, that I have big potential, but I needed a bit of, you know, support in the beginning to gain my confidence. And yeah, of course, you know, you don't want to make a disaster, you know, in your comeback. Of course, if the first few races would be totally bad, you know, I would be starting to doubt myself again. But luckily, as the season went by, it was getting quite good.
And how different did you feel within yourself? Did you feel like you'd grown as a person?
Yes, I did. I was more aware of different things, you know, I was more under control, I would say, in the situations, you know, where before I would be maybe panicking a bit or more nervous, I was able to hold my cool better. And it was evident, and also to other guys in the team who knew me since I was young, they said that it's quite nice, you know, to have you back.
Oh, it was. It was lovely to see your face back in the paddock. And so what were your mechanisms for coping with the anxiety? Did you train more? I know you like your boxing, but did you meditate? Was that about music? How did you cope with the pressure?
Yeah, you know, also I came back, you know, with Stu, my physio was a big help, of course. I know him since 2010. He was my trainer also when we were in Red Bull Junior. And you know, I was looking for a trainer to come back, and I wanted to have someone I knew very well next to me, because it would help me to, because we spent so much time together, so that it would help me, you know, to and he knew me quite well also personally. So sometimes he would, you know, give me some good piece of advice during the year, especially in the first races. And like with him was very good. Good atmosphere, and of course it wasn't easy for him to come back because he has his family, but he really was also interested about the project. And so we did 1 year. It was a good fun times, and of course working out, you know, having good working ethic when you're at home, even not only at races, when you sleep well, eat well, you're able to repeat your training consistently. It's important, you know.
Yes, Stu is a lovely, lovely man. That is definitely true. And I think it's really important to have a mate, someone that you can actually talk to at the track with you. Because, you know, you're in and out of hotels. It's all a bit impersonal. And then when you're at the racetrack, as you've already alluded to, it's difficult to kind of connect with the other drivers because ultimately you're performing, competing against them. So it is important to have. Like, I remember Jenson Button always talking about the importance of a sort of little bubble and creating a little circle of friends around you that sort of have always got your back. You obviously had Helmut Marko as well as a kind of, you know, I think he's quite scary. You probably feel differently, but, you know, he's kind of had this really interesting kind of control over your career. He's definitely been a massive support to you. How much influence do you think he has had on your career and your life generally?
Well, since 2009, a lot. That's when I joined Red Bull Junior. And of course, since then, you know, the major career decisions in one way or another were influenced and decided by him. So I had to work a lot trying to, you know, convince him I'm worth it, you know, worth first, you know. Of course, they pay for your career in junior categories, so it's important to always show that you are a hard worker, that you deliver the result. Then you need to, you know, prove your worth, that you are worth it in to go to Formula One, then promotions here and there. There was a lot of those steps, you know, and yeah, he's also a very good mentor, you know. Always be honest with you, and if you are bad, he will not be shy about it, that's for sure.
That's a diplomatic way of putting it, because I heard that he has got interesting kind of psychology with the drivers, and quite often he'll say things to you just before you're about to go out that kind of, I don't know if they're meant to unsettle you or just to test you, but he'll say things like, you know, you better be good today, otherwise that's it. Or, you know, words to that effect. I'm sure he's slightly punchier language than that. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, just remember, like in Singapore, in Formula BMW, I think it was still 2010. And in the grid, you know, there is two lights to go, and that's where everyone has to leave. And I was starting from pole, and, you know, he would come to me, and he ran to me while everybody already had to leave, and he said, good luck, you have to win today, okay? And
or
I was
what?
Like, okay.
Or what would happen?
Oh no, I was already doing well at the time, so there was no threat of getting fired, but he just said to me, you bring like the win home. That's it. And he left. And it was a dramatic race actually, until like last lap I was fighting with one guy, and I think we touched on last lap. I overtook him, but it was controversial. And they gave me something like 1 second time penalty. I don't know, just to move me from first to second. And he was actually very angry, but not with myself. He was angry with Stewart's luck.
Oh, shit. So that's too much. I don't know why he's so intimidating. I think it's because he doesn't, yeah, he's so direct, isn't he, with his language. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't pussyfoot around, as we would say.
Oh, he's not that intimidating. I mean, in the beginning, and especially when you're a young driver, yes, it can be. But now, of course, you always respect his work, but you're able to hold, you know, normal conversation. So I think you should just copy with him and you will change your opinion.
Well, I have to say, when he wore Lederhosen at the Austrian Grand Prix 1 year, I was like, I can't take you seriously ever again. That's fine. All the mystique's gone.
In the Pink and Bose want to support you in whatever way we can during these uncertain and constantly evolving times. So we're giving away more noise-cancelling headphones to bring some added calm to your life. To win the headphones, just tag in the three friends you're most looking forward to reconnecting with once lockdown is fully lifted. Always include the hashtag Bose, and those headphones could be yours. Good luck and stay connected.
So let's talk then about your most recent podium, and I don't know where it would rank in the three, whether it's the best one, but it certainly seemed the best drive that you've performed in order to deliver the podium was obviously at the German Grand Prix last year. What a bonkers race that was. I mean, it had everything. And you emerged unscathed at the end of it, one of very few drivers who did, and was on the podium. I mean, and you became a father the same day. I just remember hugging you in the pen afterwards going, I don't think it gets any bigger than this.
Yeah, it was a huge night. Obviously, my daughter, you know, was born the same night. And so I didn't have best of sleeps because it was during the night. And yeah, I was happy, of course. And then the race day was raining a lot. And you know, I think I remember Franz came to me on the grid and said, look, if you just finish today clean, it will be a good result. So he was right. And of course, the beginning of race was tough because, you know, I was starting right in the middle of all the mess and all the spray from other cars. I couldn't see anything. I was really blind, like couldn't see much. And the track was, you know, drying up. It was very delicate situations, always very slippery, on the edge of going off. And in fact, many drivers, you know, made mistakes that day. So it was important to stay on track and keep your head cool and and choose the right moment to go on slicks. Like, I knew it was crucial. It would be crucial because I felt that at some point we'll have to go on slicks, and to choose that moment was crucial. It changed everything. Yeah. And then I just had to overtake, I think, Racing Point and hold them behind me. And Vettel was charging as well. It was tricky last few laps. And then to finish, you know, the podium was a huge relief, huge emotion for everyone. It was a very happy moment, yeah.
And what do you think it did for your career to get a podium in amongst all that chaos? You know, because you really did put in a magnificent drive. Do you think it was a boost when you needed it to really kind of, you know, reassure people that you were back and you were better than ever?
Yeah, maybe it wasn't reassuring enough, but still. yeah, it was good. It was mainly for, of course, I was happy for the team, mainly for the team, because I wanted to, you know, leave, always bring a strong result to Toro Rosso and to bring them on the podium after, you know, 11 years. It was very happy. And for me, of course, it was just a sense of achievement, I guess. That's what I would call the most, because I wanted to achieve something big always. And at least already this is something I can always, you know, take with me in my heart, no matter what, no matter where, but it will always be there. And I just hope more moments like this in the future and so on.
Absolutely. And when you're up there on the podium, is there a real sense of pride in racing for Russia, even though you haven't lived there for a very long time? I'm just kind of curious as to the Russian culture and how open Russians are, because certainly whenever we go to Sochi, it's well received. But do you think that that Formula One is in the hearts of the Russians?
Certainly. There is more interest now for Formula One, for racing in general in Russia than before. It's growing, you know. It's not as fast process as many people think, you know. And it needs to be well managed as well, with good people behind it. Of course, you know, to have a driver at the racing track is important. Yeah, that's it. But you know, they want also, of course, the victorious people. No one really cares if you finish third, fourth, or fifth in Russia. That's how it works, you know. That's the thing, you know. I could see sometimes, you know, if Perez finishes seventh in Mexico, is very differently received. If I finish seventh in Russia, you know, so it's normal. I don't complain, for sure. It's just the way things are in that country.
That's so interesting. So they don't necessarily get behind you and support you as you come through. They just want you to be immediately victorious. That must be something to do with Putin. He's drilled it in that it's win or nothing.
Well, when you put it that way, it's a bit harsh, no, on the guys. It's like, no, I have a very good lot of fans that have been sticking around me since junior career, for sure. There are those people, of course. It's just that, you know,
you have to be fair to them as well. Formula One just started growing,
yeah,
mainly 3 years back ago. It's not, and like I said, it's unfortunately it's not an extremely fast process. You know, in England, you have big culture of racing, or let's say football racing. In Russia, it's hockey, for example, and boxing. I would say like this, but not F1 at the moment. Not as big there as those sports.
But you're a pretty handy boxer yourself, aren't you?
I'm okay. I can stand for myself, but I'm really into it. I really love that sport, and I like it a lot. And I just regret starting a bit too late. Yeah, I enjoy. I always enjoy. I never been in a big sparring. I did a few sparrings, but I never been in what they call competitive sparring, where the guys try to take your head off.
Yeah. I'm not sure Franz or Helmut would particularly appreciate that, given your career.
I don't know.
I interviewed someone on this podcast from the SAS. We've got a show over here called SAS Who Dares Wins. And he's this great guy called Billy, who's come up through the ranks, but he was from quite a poor background, and he got into boxing very early, and he called it chess for the poor. I thought that was a pretty cool way of describing boxing, because there's so much that goes into it. You know, it's a very raw, beautiful sport in many ways, isn't it? You know, it's one person outwitting another.
Yeah, it's very... It's very tough mentally also, you know, because you're so tired after two rounds and you need to still perform well. So it takes a lot of training and discipline. Yeah, it's I agree. That's why I like it. And you have to dig deep many times to be able to perform. But you also can work on the bag sometimes on the pads. But I enjoy sparring a lot also with some of the, you know, professional guys. And they take it easy on me, but still, it's always a learning process, no?
I think we should do a white collar boxing match with you and someone else from the grid. Who would you most like to box?
Anyone, to be honest. With them, I'm confident it will be okay.
I reckon, yeah. Do you know what? I reckon you could take most of them. I can't think of anyone that would be... I reckon Danny Rick would be pretty handy. I've seen him do a bit of sparring.
Yeah, we spoke about it actually. Maybe once in December we will try when there is a gap between, you know, races. And Carlos was also talking to me about doing something, and but he wants to take it easy, so I don't know. But also, you know, we need to, how do you say it? We're not professionals, no, it will not look very beautiful.
I don't know. Daniel loves his UFC, you know, he just loves every kind of mixed martial art, and you've just got to be a little bit wary of that he doesn't sort of slip in another move that's away from pure pugilism.
Anytime, anyone, anywhere.
Yes, I love it. Just finishing up, how would you describe yourself? Because some of the things, the traits that have clearly come forward, and obviously I've known you for some time now, but you're clearly very determined. You clearly have this sort of never giving attitude, tenacious, and you've touched on discipline there. How else would you describe yourself, do you think?
Oof, you know, it's hard. It's hard to say. I think it's those comments that you said are always fair, you know, for an athlete who isn't competing in the top level, and that's what I do, of course. And you have to have those qualities, you know, in order to be there with everyone else. And it's always, we'll have to take something else, you know, to really make this very last step. And it's hard to describe with words, you know, you just have to find it, have it. And the timing is very right. But talking about myself, I don't like, you know, describing myself. It feels like I always try to work on my not so good qualities, you know, like, you know, when I was younger, maybe I was less patient, you know, when I was younger in go-karting, I would always want to win, and very impatient if things, you know, weren't going my way. And sometimes, you know, I would finish second in a race that I should have won, and I would cry, you know, for many minutes straight, and the people were like, come on, man, you just finished second, it's not like you finished last. But I wasn't having any of it, so I had to learn how to
control more my, you know, emotions and these kind of things. It's like good example, you know, like in Hockenheim, of course, it was a very tough race and it was hard to keep the head cool. But that's, for example, the things I tried to work on that in the end bring you the result. Because everyone in Formula One is fast enough. It's just you need to learn what makes you be better.
And do you think becoming a father has helped at all with that? Because I certainly changed a lot when I became a mum.
Yes, I would say, of course, certainly it makes you see different side of life. And of course, you it makes you think a lot. But, you know, once you're racing, you're in such a, you know, different space that you try to leave everything in the garage, all the baggage of emotions and other things is left there. So once you're on track, you're facing yourself, no, and your competitors. So, but yes, certainly it's a very, very different part of life.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time. It's lovely to see you again.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you. And hope to see you soon on around the racing track.
Definitely.
I think there are a handful of F1 drivers on the grid who perhaps don't get the attention, the limelight that they deserve. But once you dig a little bit, you find that they've got great personalities and there's a lot more depth to them than is immediately obvious. And for me, Kvyat is one of them. So thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your life story with us. Keep doing what you're doing and hopefully you will have a great 2020 season when it gets underway. Thank you very much, Danny Kvyat. Now, guys, don't forget that you have still got the opportunity to win these noise-cancelling headphones from Bose. And they are amazing. Trust me, they're exactly what you need right now and for the rest of your life, in fact. Just that moment of calm away from the madness that these headphones can offer. So all you need to do is tag in two friends on Instagram, either on my page or on the In The Pink podcast page, and make it the friends that you're most looking forward to reconnecting with once lockdown is fully lifted. Add the hashtag Bose, rate, review, subscribe, join our In The Pink community, and those headphones could be yours. Until next week, and in fact, we've got loads of people coming up next week, including Sir Chris Hoy. What a man he is. He will certainly inspire you, I'm sure. Until then, take care, stay connected, and see you very soon. Bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.